Thank you for that introduction, and thank you for you all coming on the last day of the conference. It's really appreciated. I have no conflict of interest to disclose, but before I begin, I would like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Paige Hall-Smith, as well as other people who are involved in the research efforts, including the organizations, the participants, and the Center for Women's Health and Wellness at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and the graduate school who gave me a graduate grant to fund this project. Here is a brief overview of what I will be discussing today, but we will begin with the background. Although infant mortality has decreased in the United States, as you can see, it's stratified across states. Today, I will be talking about North Carolina, and this shows that North Carolina is close to high range in infant mortality rates. And in fact, in Guilford County, the county in which Greensboro resides, they are the 10th out of the 100 counties with the highest infant mortality rates. Research shows that infant mortality is linked to unintended pregnancies. And North Carolina, again, is one of the states that has high unintended pregnancy rates. Factors which are associated with unintended pregnancy rates include women's behaviors, which could be lack of folic acid intake. It could be alcohol and drug use prior to or during pregnancy, and comorbidities such as diabetes, and a lack of contraception. The pie graph to your right shows that the majority of women who reported an unintended pregnancy in 2010 reported having inconsistent or non-use of contraception. But I also want to note that there are also more structural level factors that are also associated with unintended pregnancies, such as lack of access to reproductive services. Unintended pregnancies in California account for almost half of pregnancies which occur. The majority of women who report unintended pregnancies are African American, and they are between the age of 18 to 24. Most of them report cohabiting with a partner, and they also happen to be low income. So in response to decrease infant mortality rates and to have more women to have intended pregnancies, the Center for Disease Control in 2010 came up with 10 recommendations to support preconception care. And one of the recommendations were reproductive life planning, which include individual responsibility across the lifespan. Each woman, man, and couple should be encouraged to have a reproductive life plan. However, although they have set out these recommendations in 2006, to date, there is still a lack of evidence-based tools that women can use or that providers can use to help women develop a reproductive life plan. Among those that are actually created, they're more so tailored towards women with comorbidities such as diabetes or women who have previously experienced an adverse outcome. So the purpose of this study will be to discuss preliminary findings from a longitudinal study assessing the utility of a reproductive life planning workbook with low-income sexually active women to help them develop their own personalized reproductive life plan, including communicating more effectively with their healthcare providers. Our theoretical framework was developed based upon the social continent theory, where we thought that women being exposed to the workbook, they would define their reproductive life goal, they will develop a plan, and developing a plan could lead to them increasing self-efficacy to seek care, their care-seeking behaviors, and communication with their doctor, which would then result to them actualizing their plan. So just to tell you a little bit about the workbook, I actually bought a copy today. So it's very small. We wanted to make it small where women can actually put it in their purses. But I know a lot of you may be thinking, why a workbook when we're advancing with technology now? And the women that we actually worked with, they're low-income women in Greensboro, North Carolina, and the majority of them seek services from social services, and they have the phone that's provided of them through them that has a limited amount of minutes and a limited amount of access you could access the internet. So it was important for us to have something that they could actually hold in case they ran out of minutes or usage to access the internet for the month. This is the cover of the workbook. Start is titled, What Do You Want? A Women's Reproductive Workbook for Reproductive Life Planning. So here's the table of contents. It contains a lot of information, such as how can you get information about sexually transmitted infections, why does my body need folic acid, what are the risks of drinking alcohol, and why are there so many types of birth control options. I think the reason this workbook is unique is because it's tailored for four different reproductive tracts. The first one is, I want to get pregnant now. The second, I would like to have more children, but not now. The third is, I do not want to have any more children. And the last section, which I feel like a lack of reproductive services are for now, is for women who've had a hysterectomy, their tubes are tied, or they're unable to get pregnant. And this can include women who are out of the reproductive life cycle. So usually reproductive life planning doesn't look at these women, which these women will still need to consider their risks for sexually transmitted infections, continue to get their breast exams, as well as cervical screenings. So the workbook is interactive. Each section starts with an assessment, and this assessment is actually from the general health section. We also have some questions that they can ask their doctors, followed by some bubbles. So, for example, it says folic acid helps prevent birth defects and is good for your body. And then we have them ask the question, so what do I need to know about folic acid and how can I be sure I get as much of it as I need? So in each section, we have these thought bubbles, which are correlated with a question that they can ask their doctor and that they can fill out beforehand. We also have a section with any section for notes for women to take at the end. And the workbook also includes a glossary and resources in the area. This was a two-phase study. The first phase was the development of the workbook. We worked with two community stakeholders, and we did focus groups where we had women look at the workbook, choose their section, complete the information, and then we asked them how did it work for them, what can we improve. We improved the workbook, and now we're in phase two of the workbook, which is the evaluation, and we're working with one of the two community stakeholders, and we're tracking women for 6 months. Today, I will only be sharing information from phase two of the study. We recruited women from December 2014 until May 2016. And here are the potential number of participants which were at each event that I went to recruit women, and the actual number of women, the actual number and percentage of women that were recruited. As you can see, it ranges from 22% to 71%, but in total, at the bottom, we recruited 23 women, and that represents 52.3% of the potential participants. Today, I will only be discussing results from women from cohorts 1 and 2, as the other cohorts, they are still in the process of completing their 6-month follow-up. Here's a display of our sampling procedures. For women in cohorts 1 and 2, it was a total of 11 women. They all took their baseline survey, and then each of them were received a workbook. They were either allocated into intervention A, which was a group of women who would receive monthly reminders to look at their workbook, or intervention group B, with women who did not receive any reminders. There was one woman who was lost to follow-up in intervention group A. So in total today, I will be presenting findings from 10 women. And the reason why we decided that each group should be exposed to the workbook, we're working with a really vulnerable population, and we thought it would be unethical to not give all women access who wanted access. So we assessed under what conditions should organizations use this workbook to help women. here's examples of the monthly reminders. So for months 1 and 2, we really focus on, have you thought about if you want or do not want children now or in the future? And these reminders were developed based upon the trans-theoretical model, so we're expecting for them to advance as they have the workbook. For months 3 and 4, we focused on, have you defined actions you can take to have a healthy pregnancy or avoid pregnancy now or in the future? And then in month 5, we focused on, have you began to take actions towards your decision to have or not have children now or in the future? I am going to be reporting findings on the total 10 sample for demographic characteristics. And as we go along, I will continue to show results for the entire sample since it's such a small sample at this time and point. So the majority of women were employed. They were African American, with relatively few reporting Hispanic Latina as their ethnicity. 10% of them were married, while 3% of them were living with a spouse, and this does not include the woman who was married. The majority of them had an annual income less than $20,000. The mean age was 22.9, and the majority of them reported having between 1 to 2 children. The women were asked, what do they think when they hear of reproductive life planning? And as you can see in the blue, an emerging theme that came across all women had to do with having a child, expanding their family, and if they wanted to have kids or not. The column, which is in the white-yellowish color, is baseline findings. In the blue column is follow-up findings. So we can see at baseline, all women only fit within 2 categories. They wanted more children, but not now, or they did not want any more children. At follow-up, however, a woman transferred to wanting more children now, but the majority of women still fit within the 2 categories of want more children, but not now, and do not want any more children. At baseline, we had relatively few, so about 4 of the women out of 10 had developed a reproductive life plan. But as you can see, we had 5 women among the 6 who did not develop a reproductive life plan at baseline, stating that they would like to develop a plan. At follow-up, we had slightly fewer women who developed a plan. But the amount of women who would like to develop a plan remained the same. However, I wanted to note, although the graph shows a decline in the amount of women who developed a plan, we did have one additional woman from baseline who did not develop a plan stated that they did actually develop a plan at follow-up. Among the women who were actualizing their plan at baseline, they stated doing the following things to make sure that they're actualizing their plan, which included using birth control. At follow-up, it was similar where they're using birth control, and one woman stated she was actually abstaining from sexual intercourse. At baseline, we had 6 women who said that they talked with their doctor about their reproductive health, and we saw an increase to 7 at follow-up who said that they talked to their doctor about their reproductive health in the past 6 months. All women reported using the workbook, and they discussed using the workbook in the following ways. And an overarching theme that arose from these responses were that they were able to use it before they went to their healthcare visits. It was a tool that they can use to advocate for themselves within their appointments and help them ask their doctors more informed questions. So in wrapping up, Women's definitions of the Reproductive Life Planning Workbook consisted with the Center for Disease Control's definition of reproductive life planning, which included deciding when they would like to have a pregnancy and making sure that they were actually implementing those procedures to make sure it didn't happen. We had one additional woman who developed a reproductive life plan from baseline to follow-up, but the woman who stated that she did not develop a reproductive life plan, so the changes that you all saw in the graphs was the one woman who changed from not wanting children but not now to wanting children now. So she was changing her reproductive track. So we hypothesized that, you know, maybe since she changed her reproductive track from baseline to follow-up, she's probably figuring out what it is she needs to do, or from focus groups with the women in developing the reproductive life planning workbook, some women didn't think that they needed a reproductive life plan if they were actively trying to get pregnant. More women from baseline to follow-up reported communicating with their doctors, and this was reflective in the quantitative results as well as the qualitative results. So women really felt that this workbook empowered them in some shape or form to talk with their doctors about the reproductive life planning. And this was also echoed in phase one of the study. Women, they said that they really enjoyed the questions that were in the workbook and that it was something that they could see themselves taking it to the doctor to have these questions. They discussed that doctors are on 15-minute rotations and that sometimes it seems like they don't have the time to actually advocate for themselves, but if they planned ahead, they would feel more empowered to actually ask questions. There was a limitation of this study. It's a relatively small sample, but again, this is preliminary findings and we're still in the field collecting data. So we hope to recruit enough women to make some comparison analyses. All women will have completed the 6-month follow-up survey it's now officially November, so by the end of next month. So we anticipate that the majority of the women will complete the workbook since we're partnering with a community organization who are serving these women and they actually track them as well. Here is my contact information for any of you who are interested in contacting me. I also have cards, and then as I mentioned, I brought a copy of the workbook if any of you are interested in looking at it.
Is there a question we can take for Brittany right now? Sure, first.
That was a misleading slide. I didn't mean to say risk factors associated with unintended pregnancies, but, I guess you can look at it in that way. I said a lack of folic acid intake. So, by having an unintended pregnancy, you're not consciously thinking, oh, I need to take my folic acid before getting pregnant. So you can miss that opportunity, and not having folic acid can lead to abnormalities in the infant at birth.
I
didn't
think.
Yeah.
What would you say is the leading level of the material? Do you feel comfortable passing around?
Sure, yes.
I could pass around, but I just needed that. We're not yet piloting it out in the field.
But we did check the reading level. So we worked very closely with the organization who served these women, and they were active participants. This was a collaborative project. So we developed the content together. We rephrased things. We developed the instruments together. And then women in phase one of the study, they reviewed it. They said it was straightforward. Most of them completed the workbook within 10 to 15 minutes. And we did make some significant changes based upon their input.
Doing it in Spanish. We have talked with people about doing it in Spanish. The only thing that hinders us with this is this portion of the intervention was funded by a graduate student grant of $2,500. So it's a very limited budget. But we are trying to actively do what we can. We just actually put in a grant to put this online where organizations can actually access it and pull what they want. So I'm hoping in that phase we're going to be working with some organizations who serve Latina women. So hopefully they will become more actively involved with that so we can actually have that available.